Imagine like a boardroom pitch. A group stands up, they identify a failing piece of infrastructure, propose a whole new architectural redesign, and then confidently ask the board of trustees for the capital funding to build it.
Right, a classic business scenario.
Yeah, exactly. But now imagine those presenters are literally 11 years old.
It is wild.
It really is. So welcome to a very special deep dive, tailored specifically for you, the parents and carers of Ashwell Primary School. We've been looking through Mr. S. England's newsletter for the spring to half term, and honestly, even though it only spanned February and March, the sheer density of what your kids have been doing is staggering.
It's a remarkable document to read. I mean, our mission today is to unpack the incredible breadth of experiences the children have had over the last few weeks. We're going to go way beyond the standard timetable to see how the school is actively shaping, curious, independent, and community-minded young people.
Okay, let's unpack this because reading through these updates, you realize Ashwell Primary feels less like a traditional school and more like a dynamic incubator. And we want to explore that with you, the parents, because you're such an essential part of this thriving community.
Absolutely. You're the ones reinforcing all of this at home.
Yeah. So let's start by looking at how they bring the curriculum to life. Like
Yeah.
World Book Day 2026. This wasn't just bring your favorite paper back to class. It was a complete environmental takeover.
Oh, total takeover. The staff used those story sack spoons, they did live lessons, and they had these incredibly physical read around the world sessions.
Yeah, where the classes actually move through different stories, right?
Right. They fundamentally altered the spaces the children are used to learning in.
I mean, the dining room was completely transformed into a reading-themed tea party, and you had the older kids pairing up with the younger ones for the cross-year reading buddy
Which
sessions.
is so great for peer bonding.
Definitely. And the classroom doors. They became these massive art installations because the kids decorated them based on their favorite books.
And, there's a very specific cognitive reason why the school invests so much time in altering the physical environment for something like literature.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when you read a text in a quiet, standard classroom, your brain relies on semantic memory. That's just the storage of plain facts and concepts. And semantic memory is notoriously fragile, especially for young kids.
So semantic memory is like saving a simple text file on your computer's desktop. It's functional, but it's really easy to accidentally delete it or lose it in the clutter.
That is a perfect analogy. But when Ashwell turns literature into a physical tea party, or when kids are actively painting a door to look like a book cover, the brain shifts to episodic memory.
Okay, and that's different how.
Well, episodic memory is tied to specific events, emotions, spatial awareness. The brain suddenly attaches a dozen different sensory tags to that knowledge.
Ah, I see.
So a child might forget a plot summary they read on a random Tuesday, but they are not going to forget the tactile experience of that tea party or sitting with their reading buddy.
The knowledge gets sticky, it anchors to the experience. And I mean, learning at Ashwell isn't just about staring at a textbook, right? It's like a VIP backstage pass to the real world. We saw that exact same thing with Science
Oh,
Week.
the science initiatives were fantastic.
Yeah, it wasn't just theory. Year five actually partnered with York University's Children Challenging Industry program. These kids were testing water filtration, measuring the viscosity of liquids, and literally feeding microbes.
They took that trip to the Sartorius Science Industry site, too.
Yes, learning about medicines and robots directly from the working scientists.
Taking them to Sartorius is just a master class in contextual learning. It bridges that gap between the classroom and a future career. Suddenly, science isn't a worksheet, it's a robotic arm inside an actual factory.
Yeah, it makes it real.
And they're laying this foundation so early. Down in year one, they were tracking the local weather, right? But instead of stopping there, the teachers had them compare the UK's December weather to Australia's weather at that exact same time of year.
Using the physical globes and atlases to find the equator.
Exactly. It grounds abstract seasonal mechanics in physical reality.
Which makes me think about how physical reality, like taking learning completely off the school grounds, forces a whole new level of
Oh,
independence.
absolutely. The environment demands new life skills.
Yeah, because you don't have the safety net of your usual desk. We saw this vividly with the year five residential trip to Burwell House at the end of March.
A classic rite of passage, the residential trip.
Right, but usually that conjures up images of muddy boots, getting lost, doing orienteering, maybe building a sketchy raft out of logs.
Yeah, the standard outdoor stuff.
And they did do the outdoor games, But what caught my eye was that these Year 5s went into a fully functional TV studio and produced their own TV news broadcast.
Which is incredible. Operating a news broadcast requires a highly complex set of executive functions.
I can imagine.
You're dealing with scripting, operating tech, under strict time constraints, public speaking, and high-stakes teamwork, where, you know, if one person delays, the whole production halts.
It builds a very pressurized sort of confidence.
It really does.
And we're seeing that translation of academic knowledge into practical application in Year 6 design and technology, too. They were designing playgrounds.
Right, but not just sketching them.
No, they didn't just draw a swing set and color it in. They were handed wooden rods, dowels, and lolly sticks and had to physically construct miniature structures.
Functioning basically as junior structural engineers.
Exactly. The newsletter notes they were calculating real-world safety requirements, measuring and cutting wood for barriers and cladding.
They had to apply geometry, physics, and safety regulations to a creative problem.
Now, building a physical barrier for a playground is something we as parents can easily wrap our heads around. We can see it. What is significantly harder for us to navigate is digital safety. Which brings me to the Hertfordshire Police coming in to run a cybersecurity and fraud workshop for years 5 and 6.
Very timely workshop.
Definitely. They covered good password hygiene, the difference between legal and illegal cyber activity, and they explicitly taught these kids about the Computer Misuse Act of 1990.
Right.
But I have to push back on this just a little bit. Is teaching 10 and 11-year-olds the specifics of a criminal cyber law like a bit too heavy for primary school? Doesn't it risk giving curious kids an instruction manual on how to be a hacker?
Well, it's a completely natural instinct to worry about that. You think, are we exposing them to ideas they aren't ready for? But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the reality is that the ideas are already there.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. The police were operating under their #CyberChoices initiative. We have to remember the psychology of a digital native. A 10-year-old today has grown up bypassing firewalls to access games. They understand basic coding. They manipulate complex digital environments every single day.
So they view the digital landscape totally differently than we do.
Fundamentally differently. To a kid, guessing a friend's password to post a funny picture or downloading an unauthorized mod for a video game, it doesn't feel like a crime.
It feels like a prank or a puzzle.
Exactly. They don't possess the legal framework to understand that these actions actually cross a hard legal line under that 1990 Act.
Ah, I get it.
So the police are stepping in proactively. Not to criminalize these kids, but to say, hey, you possess a highly valuable, powerful technical skill set. Here is the legal boundary. Don't accidentally ruin your future because you thought a digital breach was just a game.
Wow, okay, so the semantic memory of the law is actually super useful here. We're giving them the definitive rule book before they accidentally step out of bounds.
Precisely. It shows a tremendous amount of respect for the students' maturity and their agency.
And agency is the operative word here. That sense that their actions have real-world consequences is being cultivated everywhere to encourage civic responsibility. And here's where it gets really interesting, the school council.
Oh, this is a fantastic story.
When most of us think of a school council, it's voting on whether the cafeteria serves pizza on Fridays or picking beanbag colors. It's a simulated exercise in democracy.
Right, usually very low stakes.
But at Ashwell, the Year 6 reps literally pitched the Henry Colborne trustees for capital funding. This was the boardroom scenario I mentioned at the start.
They identified a neglected area at the front of the school, conceptualized a multifunctional space, and made a formal presentation.
And they actually secured the funding from the trustees alongside a PTA contribution. They were building a new bike and scooter shelter, a gardening space, and a parent waiting area, and the work is starting over Easter.
The developmental impact of that realized agency is massive.
The psychological shift in a child's brain when they achieve that must be profound.
It really is. When adults actually execute the plans that children pitch, it fundamentally rewires how those kids view their place in society. They go from being passive consumers of their environment to active architects of it.
They learn that if they see a problem in their community, they have the power to fix it. And we see a highly personal version of that exact same drive with Amelie in Year 2.
Yes, the charity spotlight.
She independently decided to cut off her long hair for the Little Princess Trust to provide wigs for children with cancer. She set a 500-pound goal and just absolutely smashed it.
Which is amazing. And that level of deep empathy from a Year 2 student doesn't just happen in a vacuum.
Right.
Empathy is a skill that requires cultivation, just like reading or math. And you can see Ashwell weaving it into the curriculum from the start. look at the EYFS, the early years foundation stage. The absolute youngest learners.
Oh, the ducklings.
Yeah, they didn't just look at a diagram of the life cycle. The teachers brought duckling eggs into the room.
The kids watched them hatch right there in the classroom.
Yeah, learned how to care for them. By caring for something fragile, they practice empathy experientially.
And then they took that sunny spring walk to Ashwell Springs to see the ducks in their natural habitat.
It perfectly reinforces the connection between their actions and the wider world.
That experiential connection is so vital. And the year three class took that concept and applied it to the local community with their intergenerational project.
I loved reading about that.
They hosted a musical movement session and even brought small farmyard animals in for a visit. It breaks down those demographic barriers.
Well, all of these initiatives, the charity work, the school council, the intergenerational projects, they point to a much larger educational philosophy. Ashwell Primary is deeply invested in supporting the whole child.
Definitely. Academic rigor is just one piece of the puzzle. You've got the arts, sports, and mental well-being all playing massive roles. And the arts and sports have definitely been front and center this half term.
The year three and four productions sounded hilarious.
Parrots versus Mermaids, set at Me Hardy High School, where the central conflict is that the trainee pirates can't actually swim, so they're terrified they're going to fail their R levels.
A wonderful injection of humor.
And alongside that, you had the spring term musical showcase. We're talking solos and duets spanning from reception all the way up to year six.
The variety of instruments was fantastic, too. Flutes, pianos, guitars.
Sorters, and even a harmonica. But what stood out to me was that several children were performing their own original compositions. They weren't just reciting sheet music.
They were creating it.
Yeah. And on the physical side, massive shout out to the netball green team, first place in their tournament, and they brought a shield back to Ashwell.
Those extracurriculars built immense self-esteem. However, you know, navigating the pressures of school and friendships isn't always smooth.
No, of course not.
And this is where the newsletter does something incredibly progressive in its Send Spotlight section. They offer a deep dive into executive functioning skills, or EFS.
I really love the analogy the newsletter uses there. They call EFS the brain manager.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it.
It breaks it down into four specific cognitive areas. First, you have working memory, which is your child's ability to hold on to multi-step instructions.
Second is inhibitory control. That's the ability to think before acting or manage the impulse to, say, interrupt a conversation.
Third is cognitive flexibility. How well a child adapts when a routine suddenly changes.
And finally, emotional regulation. The ability to manage big feelings without becoming entirely overwhelmed.
What's fascinating here is the school's strategic decision to place a Send Spotlight in a general school-wide newsletter.
Right. Ashwell is intentionally normalizing the conversation around neurodevelopment for every single family.
Not just those with official diagnoses like ADHD or autism.
Exactly. It changes the entire paradigm of how parents interpret behavior.
Like, let's say you ask your child to put their shoes on, but they're deep into building a Lego set and they completely melt down or refuse to transition.
The immediate parental instinct is to view that as stubbornness.
Yeah, or disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
But when you understand EFS, you realize it's literally their brain manager asking for a little extra time to process the shift. Their cognitive flexibility is just experiencing a bottleneck.
And the newsletter gives this critical biological context. The frontal lobe, which houses these executive functioning skills, continues to develop well into a person's mid-20s.
Wow, mid-20s.
Yeah. So when a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old becomes overwhelmed, it is rarely a conscious behavioral choice. It's a biological limitation. Their neural pathways are quite literally still under construction.
So instead of getting frustrated that the construction site is messy, parents can use the actionable strategies the school suggests.
Like